Welcome to this week's episode of Off the Assembly Line. I'm your host, Rebecca Reed, and every week I sit down for possibility-sparking conversation with innovative educators and entrepreneurs who are bringing the future to education, one beautiful disruption at a time. Hey guys, it's Rebecca. I hope you're having a great week so far and taking care of yourself and your loved ones. It is a little crazy out there. One quick housekeeping item before we get going. For the next 2 weeks, I will be traveling and spending some time with family. So our next brand new episode is going to release on March 31st, and it's going to be a good one. This week I am a little under the weather. But I'm sneezing profusely. Too much information? Maybe. But I've been told that that means that I probably do not have COVID-19. So never thought that I would be grateful for sneezing, but here we are. Anyway, even though I am a little under the weather, I could not be feeling any better about this week and this week's episode. This week actually marks the 20th episode since I launched Off the Assembly Line last October. And even though we're really just getting started, I've got to marvel at just the incredible guests that have been on the show and the absolute knowledge and inspiration that they've dropped while they've been here. This week is no different, as I'm talking to one of the most inspiring, innovative, and generous leaders in education that I've had the privilege to know. I'm talking with Daniel Bauer, founder of Better Leaders, Better Schools, which is a trusted blog and category-defining podcast for ruckus makers in education. He's the author of the Better Leaders, Better Schools Roadmap, and he helps school leaders fight isolation and find solutions to their greatest challenges in his mastermind community. This week, we're talking about innovative school leadership and the role of vision and personal growth in creating meaningful change. Here we go. All right. So Danny, so great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
I am so pleased to be here. So thank you for inviting me on the show, Rebecca. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. I kind of wanted to just jump in right off the bat and ask you, this occurred to me yesterday as I was kind of, you know, doing some prep for our talk. I have no idea what your Twitter handle, Alien Earbud, is about. Yeah. What is that about?
I guess it's a conversation starter. So it works, right?
Nice.
You know, I used to be an English teacher and I love word games. So Scrabble, Bananagrams, you know, Jumble, all that kind of stuff. And when you love words, you might do anagrams, which is just, I would take my sixth graders, right? I'd put a phrase like, you are awesome, you know, whatever like a positive message would be. And then we'd do some type of activity. How many words can you create using those letters, right? That's what an anagram is. So if you take my name, Daniel Bauer, and you split up the letters, you can form all sorts of words. Well, one of those words you can form is alien ear bud. And as tech continues to be integrated into our lives, I just love the vision, the illustration of some weird alien with earbuds in his ears. And so I said, that's it. Now, it would make a lot more sense to be at Daniel Bauer or at Better Schools, which I was for a minute. But I kept the alien earbud handle because I think it fits my out-of-the-box way of thinking. And that's the story behind my social handle.
I love it. I'm so glad I asked. And I also feel like I should have figured that out. I guess I didn't look closely enough. I'm like, yeah, it's right there.
Oh, man, yeah, but that would have taken forever. No worries.
It was true. I'm not trying to and then it would have deprived everyone of an awesome story. So I kind of just wanted to jump right into a little bit of your work. And I wanted to start with this phrase that you're always saying. It's all over your work. It's all over, you know, your website. And it's this idea that everyone gets better when a leader gets better. And I just wanted to kind of tap on that a little bit and see where did that idea come from for you and what does it mean in practice?
Yeah, it's another story. So I hope that's okay.
Stories are great.
So there I was, it was 2015, maybe 2014, Global Leadership Summit, really great conference for leaders. And the guy who organized it is there on stage and he says, everybody wins when a leader gets better. And when I heard that, Rebecca, it really hit me like a brick. You know, that quote has weight to it. It has responsibility, you know? And I was thinking to myself, what am I doing to get better as a leader? At that time, I was an assistant principal. The school district I worked for, they did a great job if they were going to pull us together and bureaucratically say, here's the boxes you need to check so you don't get fired, right? But it had nothing to do about how to make change happen, how to build culture, how to build relationships, you know, design a world-class school. And so I was really at a crossroads. I could either throw myself a pity party and win the award for the assistant principal who had it the absolute worst around the world, or I could take ownership over what was going on and develop myself. And honestly, I wasn't doing enough. I was at that conference. I might go to another school conference in the year. I definitely read a lot. I've always read tons of books, but I really was pondering and starting to think, what am I doing intentionally, consistently on a day-to-day basis to get better? And so that's when I started the podcast. And just like you, I figured if I had conversations with people that had great experience, I could learn from their successes and failures. And then at the end of the day, it's all about taking action. Like, you know, if you're just consuming this information and not doing anything with it, it's really just entertainment. It's not you getting better. Mm-hmm. And so I figured if I took action on one idea that I learned from my guests as well, then I would grow my skill set. So that turned out to be true. What I didn't realize is that by becoming a better leader, I'd be able to help others, which started, you know, a whole nother journey, which we might explore, but it definitely opened up a lot of doors for me. And so really, at the end of the day, everybody wins when a leader gets better. I added everybody wins when you, Ruckus Maker, you, Rebecca, get better. Mm-hmm. And it's really just that story of like figuring out what kind of development route you want to take and then take action, because it lifts up everybody.
Yeah, it's to me, it's like the idea of the rising tides raises all boats.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing, mm-hmm. Which we're in such a competitive, assessed, data-driven, you know, you fill in the blank kind of culture and education is, I mean, just deep in the weeds of that. I love the idea of flipping the script and being like, no, like you, the action that you take actually flows out to the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start seeing it impact others? You mentioned that, you hadn't realized that when you started to develop yourself, you could actually help others develop too. When did that light kind of turn on?
Well, you know, most importantly, it turned on for me immediately, right? Because I had that epiphany and I started to change as a result. And so I do like to move quick and take action, which, you know, is a blessing and a curse, because sometimes I move faster than those around me. So it's something to be mindful of. Now, in terms of answering your question, when it start to help others, that happened a lot faster than I realized. Now, it didn't happen necessarily for me locally, which was really interesting, right? Because it's like one of those, you can't be a prophet in your own hometown type deals. But I started putting this signal out into the world via the podcast, and almost immediately, people started to write in asking for help or letting me know how, I've changed their lives. So for example, Clayton wrote in from Australia, and now I had a friend from Sydney, and basically there was a giveaway, the 10 phrases of effective school leaders is what I used to call it. I probably would be embarrassed to go back and listen to it, not for the content. The content was solid, but just the quality of the audio, you know, I'm sure it wasn't as good as it is today. So anyway, Clayton writes in from Australia and he says, you know, Danny, I love this. May I have permission to use it with my leadership team? And first I'm like, why is he asking for permission? Like that's the point of putting it out there, right? To have the ripple effect. But secondly, like I was so tickled and honored that he thought whatever these phrases were so meaningful. He wanted to, unpack that with his leadership team and have a rich discussion about, do we do this? Yes or no? To what extent? If we're not doing it, why not? And just go there with his team. And what's neat is now Clayton and I have had a relationship for years. He's moved from principal to basically a superintendent role in Australia. He's visited me when I lived in the States in Chicago. We went to a White Sox game. You know, I bought his family deep dish pizza. Like, we're legit friends. And it's because I started, you know, the podcast and took action on it. Those results happened immediately. And I have 1,000 stories just like that one.
Yeah. So I'm curious, and this is one of the questions that I kind of wanted to dig into. You've worked with school leaders across the globe for years now. Are there any challenges that like kind of rise to the top, that these are the things that doesn't matter where you are, these are the challenges that school leaders are facing just kind of day in, day out?
Yeah. You know, some topics that are specific to our industry that are important and popular to discuss right now are like, you know, trauma-informed practices, restorative practices, that kind of stuff. And that matters. And we do talk about it, you know, in my work. But more importantly, I look at just leadership and making change happen more broadly, right? Mm-hmm. And questions like, yeah, how do I build a world-class culture? What's the path to effective leadership? Is there a path? What's the next step? So now we're getting into confidence, priorities, planning, that kind of stuff, isolation. How do I move this big organization towards the ideal future that I vision, you know, move this and steer this huge ship? And that, you know, that is going against the grains of tradition. We've always done it this way. It's comfortable here. Why are you making us change? You know, that kind of stuff. And really, I think that all leaders wrestle with the resistance, right? Imposter syndrome. Am I enough? Even when I'm a principal, even when I'm a superintendent, even let's say if I'm a New York Times bestseller, I still wonder, am I enough, right? And so it's those are like the human questions that we deal with in leadership.
When it comes down to creating change, like the big change that you're talking about in schools, if there was a spectrum between the individual, like the individual leader, and every other factor, you know, environmental factors, circumstantial factors, you know, constraints, everything else beyond the individual, I'm curious how much influence the individual leader has over creating these big scale changes.
So they definitely have a lot, right? In terms of casting vision, you know, that's helping an organization move from here to there. And there's quotes that I love to throw out there regarding vision, right? Write the vision down so that those who read it will run. That comes from Habakkuk 2:2, or Seneca says, if you don't know what port you're sailing to, no wind is favorable, right? And so a major component of leadership is absolutely saying, like, here's where we're at, and it's okay, you know, and I celebrate all the successes and things that we've done, but here's where we're going and why we need to change. And so it's putting that painted picture or vivid vision out there for your organization. It starts with you as a leader, you know, and honestly, it doesn't matter outside of you. Like, you have to start with yourself. If you don't start there, then it doesn't make any sense. But you know, Marie, who is the provost of the Alt MBA and all the Akimbo workshops, she shared something the other night with me, which was just absolutely profound. And it's really a new idea to me. And so I don't know, I'll do my best explaining it. But she showed 30 seconds of this video of starling birds. Do you know anything about them at all? Okay. Mm-mm. I don't know either. So I'd love to say like they're from this region and they're this big and they live this long. I can't do that. But what the video captures that I think is important in regards to leadership, education, and vision is that these starling birds, when they fly, it's not this linear path, right? So we do talk about moving from here to there. But the reason she showed this video is we were digging into this idea of what is culture, right? And the starling birds, when they fly, you've probably seen this, but it's like this cloud of birds, and they start going, you know, to the east, but then they're moving to the west. And so they're not going in a single direction. They're evolving. They're getting pushed and pulled in different directions. You also kind of wonder, like, who's the head bird, you know? And it's just interesting that they move as a group, right? So there's a lot of, it's a metaphor. There's a lot of great lessons there. But I love the idea that that culture, that vision, that leadership, you start saying, like, we're headed this way, but then you're flexible within that, right? You allow that your organization, the people that are responsible for the results, they have the ownership of saying, you know what, we're headed this way, but we need to move over here first. And that twisting and turning and pushing and pulling, you know, is all a part of it. And I really love that image.
Yeah, it's the difference between a vision and an action plan, or the role of a vision versus the role of an action plan. Yeah, I like that. And now I'm going to go look up starling birds.
I'll send you a link after the show, and maybe you could put it in show notes and check it out, you know,
definitely
for yourself. But I think, too, what's important there is that, you know, if you choose to be inflexible, rigid, right, that this is the way it has to be, and then you get frustrated when things go off that plan, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment and frustration and maybe taking things personally and all this stuff that's going to work against you, right? But if you, like the starling bird, are flexible and creative and light and fun and playful, a lot more good stuff happens as a result.
Yeah, it's something that I've been learning over the last year is that a lot of times the path does not become clear until you really start moving. And I mean, that's just something else that's kind of coming to mind. Let's press on creating cultural change a little bit. When you work with school leaders who are coming in wanting to create that change, what's generally the biggest resistance that they think they're bumping into? And then what do you find is the actual limitation they're bumping into? So I guess my question really is there a disconnect between what leaders perceive to be the challenge, resistance, constraint, whatever it is, and, you know, when you drill down to it, do they find that it's really actually something else?
One of the challenges of leadership is understanding how much time it takes to make change. You know, it's not a microwave. I remember, like, microwaves didn't exist when I was younger, and then they were here. And you could cook food, or I guess reheat food, faster, right? And we see that. I mean, look at our phones, you know, and technology, notifications, Amazon, 2 day, 1 day, 1 hour. Like, it's insane how fast we can get our hands on stuff, at least in the United States. And so change takes a long, long time. I think leaders are at a disadvantage because not necessarily the central office or boards are willing to give you the runway that you need as well. And so you have a pressure and unrealistic expectation that it has to happen quickly. Like, no, that's ridiculous. That's not a game. You should look for the opportunity within those challenges, but it's probably not a game that you want to play. And if you're in an environment that wants the microwave, you know, let's think about it in terms of food, right? If I'm going to have you over for dinner and I made you dinner in the microwave, how excited are you going to be? As opposed to, let's say we have a bottle of wine, where they're cutting up, you know, all the vegetables and meat, you know, whatever your style is, and we put it together and it takes an hour and we have a time, you know, doing that, you're probably going to enjoy the latter meal as opposed to the former microwave meal.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's example.
That's a part of it. It's connected to what we were discussing earlier, when you think that it's just a linear path, and it's not. So expectations and understanding, just the route that you need to get. It starts with you, but it doesn't end with you. So at some point you have to give it over to your people. And is there shared agreements and ownership over it, right? So I don't think we work hard enough at developing relationships, develop shared vision. and get people to say, this is now something I believe in. So I'm going to help you make it a reality. I think perceived and real, we touched on the idea of tradition, and something that drives me nuts is, yeah, when I do hear we've always done it this way, you know, and I have an event this summer on vision. And so a recent blog post was a promise, right? For those that enroll and raise their hand to attend, I promise you nobody at that event will say we've always done it this way, right? That's the wrong kind of person. And so it's only the innovative, you know, world-class leaders that we want to have there that want to dream big and think differently. Is there anything else like going on underneath in terms of making change? I mean, it's really, really difficult work. And I know that the leaders that try to go it alone, you know, are going to have a much more difficult path, right?
Right.
And so whether it's working in a community that, you know, that I run, or you have the teacher masterminds, right? Like there's work that you do independently, but you got to break out of that isolation, you know? And what I've learned, like, let's break it down to a very practical example, launching the podcast. All the information's out there. I could watch YouTube. I can take courses and all that kind of stuff to learn how to do it. But I decided to invest in a community and in a program that was a sprint. And as a result, I leveraged all their experience and ideas and feedback and challenges, right, to make me better. And what I was able to ship and produce as a podcast was 10 times better and 10 times quicker. Like if there is a shortcut, that's it. Mm-hmm. Lean into community, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know that everybody gets that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, say a little bit more about that, because you launched your mastermind community out of just your own desire to have more people, just great people around you several years ago. What did that process look like?
So much of what I do is, you know, I experience it and then I want to give it away to others. Right. And so I had joined a group for myself, for my personal and professional development. And I saw myself grow so quickly within this community. I had an epiphany. What if I invited people from our industry? Because they're isolated and nobody's doing it, you know?
Right.
What might happen in education if we do that? And it would be cool to impact at scale. But right now, my vision, at least, is to work with a very small amount of people that I can know, like every one of their names and their partner's names, and if they have children and what's on their bucket list, right? At least right now, my vision is I don't want it to be so big that I don't know that for the people that I'm serving. And it's all about, you know, ripple effect. So a lot of times it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, this is great for me. What if I give it away to others? And another thing too that, you know, recently I realized is many times we have the answer right in front of us and we just don't realize it, right? So that's where feedback loops and coaching and communities help out. But another practical example, I'm doing this vision event, and Rebecca, like, I'm trying to build it and invite people, and I'm not even talking about it on the podcast. Like, what am I doing? And that's my biggest that's my biggest channel in terms of making change happen. Like, and so I invested and had two people coach me, and they held up a mirror and said, okay, what about this? And I'm like, oh yeah, probably should be doing that. Mm-hmm, and the other thing too, and this is a leadership lesson, whether you're in business or not, it doesn't matter. Moving from a scarcity to an abundant mindset and from rigid to flexible. So here I am. The event's for 50 people, 22 people signed up so far. And I'm thinking, okay, how do I get 28 more to fill the event so that it's not a financial loss in terms of business sense? And so I'm drafting lists of everybody in my network, looking at who is reading my articles. Like, and then I'm like, all right, if I reach out to them, maybe there's some interest and I could fill the event. And what the coaches helped me see is like, stop focusing so much on filling the event. What if you focus on creating the event? Like, you should be working on the talks, like preparing so that it is the vision, or excuse me, the event of that you're dreaming about. And then also you could document the process. So I can create a blog post. Hey, today I worked on the first talk of the event, and here's what's in it, right? So it doesn't have to be this, this invisible sort of thing. And I could just bring people along on the journey. So this connects to what we're talking to, building culture, making change happen, vision, bring people on the journey, let them know what you're working on in the shed. And maybe, just maybe, they'll raise their hand, right? You're not forcing them. Rebecca, you have to be there. But you're just saying, hey, I'm working on this. Would you like to maybe tag along? And maybe you do. Maybe you don't. Doesn't matter. Some people will. And that's awesome. One more piece on abundance and scarcity.
Yeah.
If I just look at the 28 who have not signed up yet, because more people will sign up. Mm-hmm. And I look at the, I don't know, I've never bought a house, which is expensive. I bought a car. The event costs somewhere in the middle, right? It's tens of thousands of dollars on the line. And I'm not used to losing money. And it's scary. It's scary to sign a contract saying that you're on the line for this amount. If my focus is there, the event is going to suck, right? So the focus also needed to be not just documenting the process. What does success look like? They helped me frame these two coaches. 22 people have raised their hand and said, I want to be there with you, Danny, working on my vision. Who in my circles, anybody would kill for that. And if nobody else signs up today, there's 22 people who want to do this work. If I deliver the event I know I'm capable of, and let's say 1,000 students on average per leader at the event, that's 22,000 students like that we're impacting for the better, right? And again, ripple effect to my why. Yeah, you get it. So that was such a powerful reframe for me too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to like not go down the road of abundance mindset, scarcity mindset, because I have like hours worth of questions and just things I'd want to dig into. I mean, maybe for future, because it has had such a major impact in my life as well. Just that shift. But I've got a question for you, but I wanted to kind of pause and say, can you just share for a minute about what this event is, since we've been like referencing it for the last several minutes?
Yes, I can. And I'm great. Actually, you see my cheeks are turning red. I didn't expect that to happen. So thank you. That's really generous of you.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's happening July 9th through 11th. That's the logistics. It's in Taos, New Mexico, which is not somewhere I've been yet. I purposely, intentionally picked this place because it has mountain views. There's water there. It's embedded in nature. Most likely for a lot of people, they haven't been there yet. And I'm calling it Bollingen Tower because the work is all about vision. And Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, he built Bollingen Tower in 1923. He bought the land in 1922. I don't know if you've read Deep Work, but Cal Newport writes about this story in the beginning of that book. Mm-hmm. Carl wanted to focus. He wanted to get into focus mode, do work only he can do without the distractions of modern day living. Which is funny because they didn't have an iPhone or an Android back then, right? Like, what were the distractions, you know? But he knew that he needed to retreat somewhere to do this really meaningful stuff. And so vision work is like that, right? And if you stay in the normal day-to-day routine, you know, you most likely aren't going to create a meaningful vision that really truly guides what you and your organization's all about. I actually surveyed 119 leaders. 62% of them did not have a written down 3-year vision of where they're going personally, their family, or their organization, right? That's mind-boggling, you know, connected to the quote I shared with Seneca, like, where are you sailing, you know?
Right.
And so this event is a shout out to Carl Jung, who built that Bollingen Tower. And it's an invitation for people who want to have a break from the stresses of life and leadership so that they can dream deeply about where they're headed over the next 3 years with other people who find value in that. And again, people who aren't going to say we've always done it this way, creative folks, innovative folks. Ones that want to make a ruckus in education. So that's what it's all about.
I love it. Only school leaders or?
So actually, I've had that question asked. Since that's where I make the most impact, it's really easy to say school leaders come. But there are plenty of business leaders within my circles that have registered and who want to come as well. So at the end of the day, this is about vision for your organization generally. Could be a school, could be a district. It could be somebody that sells widgets, you know, and whatever they want to do. But the promise is this, and it's a different approach. You know, most people, when they hire me to work with them one-on-one on their vision, they're like, all right, let's get on the business or the school. Like, where are we going? I'm like, that's not where you start. You start with you, right? And so we're going to talk about the personal. You can't pour from an empty cup. Then we're going to talk about family, because how many performances or games will you miss of your kids or date nights you haven't had with your partner? You know, we'll get into that stuff, places you want to travel. Then we'll get to the organization. So it's holistic. It's everything. And it's a 3-year roadmap for all of that.
Thank you for taking a minute and talking about it. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if some of our listeners are like, that's the thing I've been waiting for. So
they are welcome to join us. Yeah.
Yeah.
The website, I would be remiss to not shout that out, but it's betterleadersbetterschools.com/vision. So you probably, you know, you can remember that and that'll get you there.
Gotcha. And I'll make sure we put that in the show notes and in the resources. So it'd be easy to find.
You got
it. Yeah. So I kind of want to, there are a few things that I'm really excited to dig into a little bit here. And I think the first thing I want to kind of go back to is something that I notice you do well and you do often. And I mean, you're demonstrating it even in this conversation, which is transparency about your own process. Mm. And I don't know if you've ever really thought about that aspect of your leadership, and sort of your own approach, but that's something that I'm picking up on and noticing. And, I just would want to ask, like, what is the role of transparency in for you in your leadership, and how do you see it playing a role really powerfully for school leaders?
Well, thank you again. What's fun about coaching or like a conversation like this on a podcast is sometimes I don't realize what people find valuable or even what I do, right? Mm. So, and there's a million stories there, but I won't go down the rabbit hole. Transparency, vulnerability, authenticity. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners and you are aware of like Brené Brown's work.
Absolutely.
Culture Code is a great book I'd recommend by Coyle. I think it's Daniel Coyle. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you're transparent and authentic and vulnerable and not weirdly too much information, and I've made that mistake before, to tell you the truth. But when you figure out the balance, what happens is you're a human and you're creating a safe space, right? And you're also showing that, well, here's how the sausage gets made, but also sometimes I screwed things up, right? So whether you're talking about what you learned about your failures and making it okay and normalizing to take risk and learning from mistakes within your organization, or just endearing people, you know, to you. If somebody, like, this works for the majority of people, right? Like, the transparent, authentic style connects me to most people. And if it doesn't, that's actually their issue, is what I've learned.
Right.
Like, something's going on with them because and it has nothing to do with me. On the opposite end, when leaders keep it so buttoned up and professional, to me, it feels very robotic and sterile and not even real, you know? And you have a hard time connecting with those folks. And again, everything we're talking about, vision, culture, making change happen, that has to do with relationships. I can, as a tyrant, make you do something for an amount of time. You're going to hate me for it. And you're going to do it out of fear. And really, you're going to do it, you know, in the worst case scenario, maybe to save your own life, right? That's only going to work for a finite amount of time. And so if you really want to make change happen over a long period, and now we're talking about legacy, right? It has to be relational. It has to be real. It has to be authentic. And so I think I've just sort of figured that out through leaders I look up to, reading I've done. I think naturally I've always kind of been that way as well. So I've just amplified it. But yeah, that's the approach I like to take.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about books. So you already mentioned it. It's something I already wanted to ask you about. It's something that I also have a personal love of, which is connecting to books outside of the education domain. And so I just wanted to ask you, like, what you said, you're always reading, and I can attest to how many amazing titles I've already seen you recommend. You've recommended to me personally. So what's the deal with these non-education books, and why should school leaders tap into like that set of resources?
Yeah. Interesting question. One, I'm kind of sick of reading about education. Okay. which is funny, because, like, you know, at least my first book's education related. I'm talking to some publishers, and the second one will be as well. Mm-hmm. So read my book, but just not, no, just the funny thing is, no, that's not funny. I think the challenge is that it becomes an echo chamber, and many people are saying the same thing. So how does that sharpen you? How does that make you grow? You asked, you opened our conversation, like, what's the deal with Alien Earbud? That's so weird, you know? Mm. And so I'm out of the box, and the gift that I give, because you know what's neat is, like, you know you're making an impact when people start imitating, right? Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I try to, in some ways, imitate what I've learned from Seth Godin, because, like, he's awesome. He's really influenced me. Now I see people starting masterminds for school leaders as well, right? Mm-hmm. That's great, because, like I said, my vision is a small group, not at scale, at least right now. And it's the more the merrier. Even if we could scale, we still wouldn't reach everybody, because there's a lot of school leaders out there.
Right.
What's neat is I see, and I study them, they're all reading education books. That's just not my style. And so my thing is, we can learn from a multidisciplinary approach, and we can learn from the best minds out there, even if it has nothing to do with teaching and learning, curriculum, assessment, discipline, like whatever. I also have an assertion that, you know, most principals are probably reading that already. Like, the district book that they give you is going to be, like, I saw it on my way out of my principal job there in Texas. It was Hacking Leadership. Cool. Hmm. Like, it's going to mm-hmm. be an education book that the district gives. That's just how it works. And so why would I give them something that, A, they may have already read, and B, like, they're probably going to get anyway. And so my thing is, yeah, let me expose you to some ideas that are out there that's working, that is really going to push you. And most of the time that works. Some of the times it's a bit challenging to find the thread and make the connection. And normally that happens a little later down the line when you get the thank you. Like, I'm sorry I fussed at you about making me eat my veggies. I didn't like it then. Like, broccoli, like, come on, man. But okay, I could see why there's health benefits with broccoli. So it works in the end. But yeah, multidisciplinary approach. And I think all the leaders that I look up to as well, they're well read across genres and industries and that sort of thing too. It's not this narrow mindset.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it so much. All right. So then I have to ask, top three reads for school leaders.
Yeah. Art of Possibility. In your opinion. Yeah. Art of Possibility is number one easily. Mm-hmm. That's my number mm-hmm. one Hall of Fame book. And I named my business, so there's Better Leaders, Better Schools, but the business is actually named 12 Practices LLC. And that's because in the Art of Possibility, they generously share 12 practices that will help you level up your life, really. And it's leadership tips too. So, and then, like, you know, all the members get this coin, which I'll show you. The listeners can't see it. There's a mascot, a wolf and an elephant on there that represents our tiny little group. But one of the core values of our mastermind is rule number 6, which is don't take yourself so seriously, right? So that comes from the Art of Possibility. Number 2, I would say man's search for meaning, Viktor Frankl. That's all about, I think, I guess, radical ownership. Like, even in the worst of situations, you know, it's his experience in a Nazi concentration camp that he could find beauty and creativity and optimism and potential within a reality that just absolutely sucked, right? Like, I mean, yeah, that's all I need to say about that. So man's search for meaning would be number 2. Number 3, I'm looking at my bookshelf. Steal Like an Artist. I'll do that one.
Cool.
Has that been mentioned before on the show? Because I want to try to give some creative new titles as well, just in case some of these have been mentioned.
I know Art of Possibility has, because I wrap all my interviews with the question, who are you giving an A to? But Steal Like an Artist, I do not think has been mentioned yet. So let's go ahead and mention it.
So what's neat about that one by Austin Kleon, it's different, right? It's almost like a picture book, kind of. I mean, it has artistic qualities to it. He's a doodler, and I just love his approach. And it's short. I mean, you can read it probably in one bathroom visit, maybe. I love to laugh, so excuse me for you know, bringing us there. It's short.
No,
you can read here, more professional. Here's the professional. You could read it on a plane ride, right? Like,
oh,
people,
wow.
Hey, can
there
I read
go.
This on a plane trip? Yeah, you totally could. You could read it in a short amount of time. And the gist of it is that take ideas from other people, process it through yourself, combine it maybe with other ideas, and then you come up with something pretty cool. So if you just steal it, that's plagiarism. But if you take a couple of neat ideas and you know, you've probably made mixtapes before in your past. Like, that's a lot of fun. And so those remixes have a lot of value. And it's not bad to steal. So he reframes, right, this idea of stealing. And that's the thing. It's almost like a lineage, right?
Mm-hmm.
From, like, I quoted Seneca. That guy, I mean, he was around a long time ago. But his voice I'm channeling, right,
mm-hmm.
to impact people today. And that's an important thing to do. So that's a little bit of what's in Steal Like an Artist.
Love it. Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that each one of those are completely outside of the domain of education and yet are completely relevant.
Oh, so relevant. Like, they need to be on your bookshelf today.
Gotta be. Go get it now. Awesome. Okay, so going back to creating change a little bit, and you've touched on at your vision event that it really starts with the personal practice. If we're going to go back to sort of like the origin points of school leadership that drives change, for leaders who are looking to create long-term, big-time change in their schools, or who are looking to bring in innovative leadership, what are the smallest levers that they can pull on that will create the biggest change? So smallest levers that give you the biggest bang for your buck.
So I'm going to talk personal change and then organizational.
There we go.
And if I forget mid-story, remind me, like, those are the two parts, because I'm going to start with personal. So personal is about routines and rituals. And let me just describe some things that work for me. One is the ideal week. And I'm not going to dive deep and teach the whole thing, but generally it's just with intention, right? How are you planning your week out? I would hope, if you're a leader, or if you're somebody interested in making change happen, I guess you're a leader, so it doesn't matter. you have a sense of how you want to spend your time. So we're having this conversation because it's on my calendar, right? And so there's blocks of time, whether it's the deep work stuff, creative blocks, podcasts and writing blogs or writing books, even smaller tasks that are seemingly like, well, they're not important, but you got to do them to keep your job, like checking email. Like that is on the calendar of when I do that, right? And so you don't keep that tab open because it's a distraction. Here's something about email. Nobody's saved the world through an email, right? It's just not going to happen. And so you got to limit, or at least I'm asserting, you have to limit your exposure to it because it's not that big of a deal. So there's a difference between deep and shallow work. There's a difference between keeping your job and actually doing something remarkable. There's a difference like playing poker, right? Staying in the round because you match the blind or the bid and actually winning the hand, right? That's the difference between like just doing the bare minimum and strategy. Routines and rituals that help me: mindfulness, meditation, journaling every single day, reading something inspirational, pausing to get outside, Doesn't have to be like for half a day, but just even a walk around the block to get some oxygen, some sunlight. So those are some things like personally that really help me out. And then investing in, communities and that kind of stuff, coaching, whatever. So organizational change, I didn't forget it. You proud of me? So this is good.
Good job.
Organizational organizational change. I'm just gonna give you something like very practical that you can take action on today. Would be to, and this also connects to transparent, authentic living and leadership. Do a bucket list, share it, what's on your bucket list with your staff, and have them do a bucket list and share it with each other and with you. So a few things are going to happen. One, you're going to help people dream big about the future, and that probably life's way more important than what you do between 9 to 5 with your job, right? I hope you love your job and I hope it does bear good fruit in your life, but there's so much more to life. So a bucket list is good to think about. Plus, we're all going to die, so it's good to think about what you want to do before that expiration date hits. Two, you are going to build deep relationships within your organization. There's going to be things like if we shared our bucket list right now, I would know you at a much more deep level, right, than I would have prior to that activity. And now imagine the impact if we've been working together for 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, right? There's teachers who have never left. Like they might have even been a student at that school, and they have no idea that the person they've taught across the hall from wanted to do this, for their entire life. And now here's the third part of what makes the bucket list important is that you can take action on somebody's idea. So if something, Rebecca, on your bucket list is to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, I'm gonna have a hard time flying you there, right? Unless I'm rich, like flying you there and getting you a guide and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so don't let that be the reason not to do this bucket list. You might also share something else that I can take action on. So here's an example. Jessica wanted to mentor a school leader, a novice school leader, somebody who is a first or second year principal. And the only reason I knew that is because she wrote it down on her bucket list, which we did within the mastermind. Well, guess what? There's thousands of people on my email list, even more that listen to the podcast. So I just said, hey, are you a 1 or 2 year principal, right? Are you new to this leadership role? Would you like some free mentorship? If so, fill out this application. And a bunch of people applied. And so I handed all those apps over to Jessica. She got to read through them, pick her ideal match. And just like that, one of those dreams was fulfilled. Another person wanted to run a marathon. So I could have signed them up. I probably could afford that. I couldn't run with him because, I'm in Europe. He's in Pennsylvania. But you know what I decided to do was buy him a Garmin watch. So that encourages him, make that dream a reality. Now you can map all your runs, you can see your pace, you can have a record, it'll be motivational. And it's those little things like that you can take action on. And when you do that, you build relational capital and you start to, I think people become more enrolled in the vision, right? Because if you're the type of leader that does that, imagine, right? I'm guessing you've, have you ever had that happen in your life? like with a leader? Have they done something like that?
I've had some really good leaders in my life. I don't know if anything of that kind of flavor, but yeah, I've been blessed to have some really generous leaders who knew me on that level.
How did it impact you?
Yeah, it's you want to run through a wall for them is what happens when you're known and genuinely cared for beyond what you can provide, you know, through your day-to-day responsibilities.
That's it. I see you. I hear you. You're important to me, to this work. And that's what it's all about. So that's how you can make organizational change happen.
I love that because that went in a direction that I never could have anticipated. Like if I had had 5 hours to come up with what you might say, sharing bucket lists would not have been on my list.
That's why I'm here, Rebecca.
No, I love it. It is. It's such an innovative idea and so easy. I mean, easy in terms of like, it's accessible. You know, everyone has these things that they want to do. And there's no posturing there either. So I love that because it's engaging people and connecting people without, it just bypasses a lot of the dynamics of the workplace. So very cool. Love that idea.
Here's the thing. Ideas are easy, right? Execution's everything. So it pains my heart to know that people listen and not do it. Like I encourage, you know, you all that are listening, like take action on that idea. Whether you're leading a whole organization or if you're a classroom teacher, you could do that with your students, you know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how old they are. It's just that, you know, what they put on their list is going to look different. But imagine what you'll learn and then how to take action on it. Like, what will that do for your relationships?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Before we wrap up, if there was one thing that you would want to like shout from the mountaintops to all school leaders, or really just to all educators who are creating change, what would it be? Like, what's your core message?
Well, besides the why, right, and the importance of developing yourself so that the community grows with you, the message is that just your work matters, right? And it's really easy in a huge bureaucracy like education to think that what you do on a day-to-day basis doesn't matter. And I would, to be honest, I was surprised to say that here that you had a lot of great leaders. Like, that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't think that's the norm, right?
I've had some bad ones. I mean, I have had some bad leaders too, but I've been blessed to have a small handful that I would say, yeah. Ooh, I was really blessed. Yeah.
Right. And so you can get jaded. You could forget why you even got into the game. And so I think what's really important to know is just that, your work matters. You matter.
Mm. Awesome. And then who are you giving an A to these days?
Me.
Who gets an A from Danny Bauer today?
I need to give it to myself.
Oh, I love it. You're the first person who said that on the show, by the way.
If I don't give myself an A every day, then I don't show up. I don't do the work. You know, I hide and then no change happens. So that, this is very much me. It starts with yourself, right? So I have to give myself an A every single day. I had a head coach training the other day in the Alt MBA, and there were 21 stellar coaches that raised their hand to be a part of it. And I was so afraid, right? Because the guy who coached me, Connor, you know, mm-hmm. he was raising his hand, and then I got to coach with him. But like, who am I to quote unquote compete for this role or whatever with somebody I look up to so much, plus 20 other amazing people? And so you have to give yourself an A and put the resistance, put the imposter to rest so that you could show up fully. That's another core value on this coin in the mastermind is whole hearts and whole selves. Just bringing, you know, who you are and the generous gift, you know, that you are to whatever community you're at And that starts with giving yourself an A.
And let me just, because this is the first time we've kind of broached that topic on the show, like what does that literally look like? Like, what does that actually mean when you get up in the morning to give yourself an A and give yourself the space to show up?
Well, it's all those routines and rituals, right? So the mindfulness, the journaling helps. I have a life philosophy I recite every day, which is create like an artist, love like a poet, smile and breathe, because I need creativity every day. I need compassion, warmth, love, connection. I need gratitude, which is the smile part, and breathing, which is pausing, mindfulness. And when you're being a jerk, like shut up and like stop being a jerk. And so that's my daily reminder. I have an affirmation, which I'm going to read for you right now. I'm a success. Nothing can stop me. I have a plan that I execute every day. I trust the process. The results will follow. Love's at the center of what I do. I'm here to serve. Generosity gives me great pleasure. I'm living an optimal life that is satisfying. I'm kind and gentle and loving toward my wife. We have an intimate connection in the love story of all time. I'm a ruckus maker, and people grow tremendously with my coaching and leadership. I help powerful people remember how powerful they are. I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do the same. I come from greatness. I attract greatness. I am greatness. And so that's an affirmation I recite. And then outside of that, try to not compare myself to others, right? And so real talk, like I had a podcast interview today, and it's with somebody who's just starting out. And I don't know the details of the scenario, but he was super excited and sharing that some speaker bureau or whatever like reached out and he's going to be working with them. And he already has all these events lined up. And for a second, if I'm honest, I'm like, ouch, like, what do I need to do to get that? You know, why don't I have that? You know, and that's not helpful. That's me comparing myself to others. It's putting an upper limit to, you know, what I'm capable of. And to be quite honest, I don't need a speaking bureau. Like I'm quite fine. Like stuff is coming to me. I don't need people going out on my behalf, but at times I compare, at times I get jealous. And that, again, you know, you said we could do a show on abundance and scarcity, but there it is. That's me at my worst. It doesn't help. And so these things like the affirmations and the life philosophy and talking about like me being a jerk or jealous or whatever helps me not do that more. Right. Mm-hmm. And it helps me snap out of it quickly.
Awesome. So good. I know. I'm like, I have a lot of things on my mental bulletin board right now for the next time when I beg you to come back on again.
Whenever you want.
This has been so good. I love it. Well, let's just wrap up like this. How can people get connected to you and your work? I mean, you mentioned the website for the Vision event, and I'm going to share that. But any other ways that people can easily reach out to you?
Yeah, the website's betterleadersbetterschools.com. Alien Earbud is my handle pretty much everywhere, and also very active on LinkedIn. Email Daniel at betterleadersbetterschools.com.
Awesome. Danny, this has been so good. I feel like I personally feel refreshed after having this conversation. So thank you for being on and sharing your insight and just being you, your full self. You always are, and it's always good.
The pleasure is all mine, Rebecca. Thank you for inviting me and allowing me to serve, you know, in this way. As a podcaster, you know, you ask the questions a lot, so it's fun to be the one telling the stories from time to time. So thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Off the Assembly Line. If you're loving the show, the best way to support it is by rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts and by sharing with others who you know need to hear it. Episode information and resources can be found in the show notes or at offtheassemblyline.co. If you want to take the next step and get connected with an incredible community of changemakers, check out teachermastermind.com or reach out to Rebecca at teachermastermind.com for more information on how to join the Teacher Mastermind community. I look forward to being back with you again with a brand new episode. Until then, lean into possibility and keep making a ruckus.